Welcome to For the Record. My name is Vanessa Ibarra, and my guest today is Tricia Bapty, founder of Honor Consulting, a Vancouver-based organization aiming to abolish prostitution. There are currently 1,500 prostitutes in Vancouver. Today we're going to learn about the group and the steps they're taking to stop the demand for sex. We will also be talking about the arrests that were made last week in Maple Ridge in connection with prostitution. Good morning, Tricia.
Good morning.
Now, before we dive into these topics in the news, why don't you tell us a bit about your history of being in the downtown East Side and how you came to found Honor Consulting?
Well, I ended up in the downtown East Side in the late 90s, at the end of my 15-year span in the sex industry. I started when I was 13 and got out around about 28. And when I left, I just spent some time healing and reclaiming my life. And I ended up covering the Robert Picton trial as a citizen journalist for an online news agency. And then from that, I transitioned into using my life story, but also through my, awareness and knowledge of the industry into working towards ending prostitution.
Now, just so our listeners know, we will be talking about the Picton trial later on in this interview. But right now, what is the group's focus of Honor Consulting that you founded in 2008? What are you aiming to do?
Well, Honor Consulting was something that I started as a way to become a part of the conversation surrounding prostitution. So it was mostly just myself trying to challenge the idea of sex as work, to bring awareness to the fact that prostitution is violence against all women, and that it's the actual act of prostitution that's the violence, not just the systemic issues that can come from it.
And I was going to mention one topic you're probably talking about right now. With the 2010 games on the minds of many people, many are celebrating, as we saw last week with the reopening of the Robson Square rink and the Olympic torch relay. However, there is a negative effect the games have on Vancouver that we aren't hearing too much about, and that is the increase in prostitution when there is a large sporting event such as the Olympics. So tell me about your campaign, Buying Sex is Not a Sport, that you're using to try and raise awareness around this issue.
Buying Sex is Not a Sport is a grassroots campaign that aims to subvert the conversation around prostitution. Up until now, it's mostly been whether or not women want to be prostituted that is the conversation. But we want to challenge men's demand for paid sex. We want to ask the question, why do we think men should be allowed to pay for sex? Do we see that as a sign of an egalitarian society?
Now, have you been working with Vancouver police over this issue of increase in prostitution, just to be aware on the streets, perhaps have more officers out watching for this? Have you had much input from the police?
We haven't had very much communication with the police. We haven't had very much communication with Zanuck. This is really an issue, just like every other issue, that wants to be slid under, to just make go away. I mean, Vanuck isn't even dealing with homelessness. It's not dealing with anything negative surrounding the Olympics. So this is something we're hoping to do that will educate people who come and see our presentation, and then they go out and affect change in their sphere of influence.
Now, the main issue your organization is looking at, you've mentioned, is demand. Why do men choose to buy sex? I was wondering, is it a reflection of troubles at home, perhaps, in their own marriage? If so, why resort to paying for sex? Why not just go to the local bar and pick up a girl? What makes men sink this low, men who could be our next-door neighbors?
Well, it is men who are next-door neighbors. When I was prostituting, the one thing I always remembered is the car seats that were in the back of the car. Like, these are fathers. These are your neighbor. These could be your dad, your uncle, your cousin. And I think we still haven't called men to stand accountable for their actions when it comes to their sexuality. And we still allow them to have excuses that somehow give validity to what they're doing. I mean, I hear it all the time, oh, what about a man whose wife is dying of cancer? Well, why isn't he at home consoling his wife who's dying of cancer? Or, you know, oh, it's a husband and his wife won't do what she wants. Well, maybe he should look at what he's wanting. Is that a reasonable request? Like, it really gives them an escape route from growing up and being responsible for their actions.
It seems like it's become acceptable among men, this little group that, you know, we don't talk about it, but this is what we're doing in the mornings when we, you know, initially say we're going to work.
Yeah, and I mean, it's men, I mean, the busiest times are, you know, businessmen's breakfast when they're on their way to work, and businessmen's lunch when they find it on their lunch hour. So it's not about, you know, relationship. It's not about them trying to find companionship. It's about them trying to get instant sexual gratification.
And one of the issues I'm looking at is, what makes a man turn to this? Like, what makes it pop in his head, oh, I'm going to go buy sex? And we've mentioned demand is a problem, but you've repeatedly said it's derived from the issue of violence against women. What we see in the media every day, it's become acceptable now to treat women this way.
Yeah. Women are so hypersexualized right now. We live in a time where women are told what to look like to have sex, but we're not taught what to feel when we have sex. Like, no one's taught to look at the deeper issues. So women as a gender have been highly commodified. I mean, it's our bodies that sell everything from motor oil to hockey tickets. And with that disconnect of having women so highly commodified, I think it robs men of what it truly means to be in an intimate relationship. But it also trains them from a very, very young age on how to treat women and how to view women. And we are viewed as a collection of body parts.
Now, when you're working so hard to abolish prostitution and start making men accountable, like you're saying, what do you think of last week's Georgia Strait article where Vancouver sex worker Susan Davis says she loves what she does and that many of her customers are indeed her friends, nice guys? The article also features SFU sociology instructor Chris Atchison revealing the results of a 3-year study called John's Voice that showed between 1 and 2% of clients have been brutally violent against a sex worker. Now, that seems pretty low if we're talking about the main problem is violence against women.
Well, I mean, the first problem with that study, and anyone who does any sort of research will tell you the problem with the study, is it calls for self-disclosure. And nobody is honest when we're self-disclosing. We always want to see ourselves better than we are. And for organizations that work on the front lines and deal with women night after night after night who are raped and beaten, like, do they want us to believe it's the same guy every night? And as for sex workers who call clients their friends, I mean, it's a lot of the same battered women syndrome, right? I see the best of them. I know him like nobody else does. I, you know, see how poorly he's treated. Yeah, he beats me. It's unfortunate, but look at how great he is. Yeah, he buys me, but look at how great he is. I think it's a lot of the same thinking and a lot of the same mechanisms at work in place when you're talking about women in domestic violence situations as well as women in prostitution situations. And I think it's kind of a sad statement on men that when we say they're great men because they didn't beat and rape me, that's a pretty low standard we have for men. And I know most men in my life are and do kind of think of themselves as a good man for different reasons than he didn't beat and rape me.
Now, do you find it frustrating when you look at these studies or articles in the Georgia Strait? Your group's doing so much work to try and abolish prostitution. Do you feel like it's one step forward, two steps back when these articles say, oh no, we love what we do and these men are nice, don't believe they're being violent? Is that frustrating for you?
Well, this particular one that's in the province or in the Georgia Strait, I think is a great article because I think the average person realizes what it is and just realizes how completely insane it is like, you're defending men's right to buy women? Because in defending that right, they're also defending men who go on sex tourism in the Philippines, the Vietnam, women in third world countries who have absolutely no hope of defending themselves. Like, that's the kind of thinking they're standing in agreement with. And I think most people, almost all people, would have issue with that.
We're going to take a short break. When we return, I'll be talking with Tricia about the recent arrest of 38 people in Maple Ridge in connection with prostitution, as well as Vancouver police's plan to impound the cars of those buying sex. Stay with us. Welcome back to For the Record. My name is Vanessa Ibarra, and my guest on the show today is prostitution abolitionist Tricia Bapty, founder of Honor Consulting. Now, Tricia, another topic in the news. Last week, Maple Ridge police arrested 38 people over a four-week period in connection with prostitution, pimps and prostitutes. When I read this, it really opened my eyes to how prevalent prostitution is, not only in Vancouver, but apparently it's now expanding at a fast rate to the suburbs. Is this just in the last couple of years it's really increased?
I would say it's probably been building for a while now. I mean, definitely when I was involved in the early 90s, it was concentrated in, and we're talking about street-level prostitution here, right? Like, street-level prostitution has always been in Vancouver as a big city, but massage parlors, micro brothels, stuff like that have been in the suburbs for a long time. So what people are complaining about is women are actually out on the street now. There's been this, like, little agreement. We don't, you know, it's that NIMBY syndrome. As long as it stays indoors, it's fine. But women who are arrested now in Vancouver and in other places as part of their not ticketing, but they now have no-go zones, so they can't go in certain zones. So that forces them out of, you know, where they're at. Some people go into the valley and into the suburbs for drug treatment and find themselves, for whatever reason, prostituting out there. And the police are very intentional about where they push women as well. I mean, there's been some problems lately between prostituted women on the streets in Yale Town and the people who have bought, you know, their condos there and don't want them around anymore. And so they're being asked to go to the Kingsway and Victoria area of the city. So it is a very, it's a problem that we've always kind of moved around, but never really done anything to solve it.
Now, is it harder customer-wise for a prostitute when you're in the suburbs? You don't have the downtown busy core like Vancouver with your popular corners. I'm sure there are popular spots in the suburbs, but is it harder to have as many clients in one day?
I don't think so. I think men from the suburbs are predominantly the ones who buy sex. I live in an economically challenged neighborhood. And let me tell you, the men who approach our girls here, whether they be on the way home from school or on the way home from the bus stop, men will ask them for, you know, if they're for sale, and they're driving cars we don't see. They're driving BMWs, they're driving Audis, they're driving Lexuses. I think it's men from the suburbs who have long gone to poor neighborhoods to buy it. Now they get to stay in their own neighborhood and do it.
Now, another topic police-wise, the Vancouver police have mentioned looking at a program where men buying sex who are referred to as Johns could have their cars impounded. This strategy began in Manitoba, and it's been extremely successful for the past few years in Saskatchewan, where in 2002, 402 cars were impounded. Now, with this operation, what are the police targeting? Because obviously it's unfortunate to have your car impounded, but what are they really trying to get at here?
I think it's a way for making men understand that society is watching them, and society is going to hold them accountable for their actions. And if they're married, they have to explain to the wife why they lost the minivan. If they're working, they need to explain to their boss why the car is gone. And with those programs, everyone is going to, you know, people say, oh, but the wife shouldn't suffer. And that's right, she shouldn't. So if the boss, the wife, can go to contact the police the next day and work towards getting the vehicle back very quickly. They only impound the vehicle until the first court appearance if, you know, usually he's a single guy or there's he can't prove a hardship without his vehicle. So I think it's one step in the right direction towards making men accountable. And in Alberta, at least, in Edmonton, they have to make their first court appearance before they get their car back, except in cases of hardship, which means they have to stand before a judge, which means there's a very real and tangible consequence to what they're doing. And then if they're a first-time offender in Alberta, they can opt out and pay $500 and go to a John school out there. And we have John school as well here in Vancouver, but ours is a pre-court diversion. So they never see a court. They're never really held accountable. They just get to pay $500 and go to, in Vancouver, you know, most of us call it a day of learning how to be a better John. So I think it's very important that we do apprehend cars. We do make them post-court programs so that men understand people are watching what they're doing.
Now, when a John's car is impounded, does the wife receive a call from, like, the company or police explaining what his car was doing there? Because sometimes when it's impounded, I wouldn't say it's initially my first thought, oh, you must have been buying sex.
Right.
So how does that work? Do the wives find out each time why it was impounded?
I believe they do, but honestly, I can't remember how they find out that information. I know in Alberta they would find out because when he goes to court, he's going for a prostitution-related charge. There's no way to hide that. You can't say, oh, I'm going for drunk driving or something. I mean, it's there on the public docket. Everyone can see.
So we're not quite sure the method yet in BC?
No.
Okay.
Oh, in BC, it's so easy to hide. So if we were to impound their cars, I would hope that there was a letter sent to the register owner or something explaining why the car had been impounded.
Okay, well, changing topics here. From January to December of 2007, former prostitute Pauline Van Call, along with Tricia, reported on the Robert Picton trial for the website Orado.com. The Thai newspaper said it was exceptional coverage. Last week it was reported that Picton has won the right to broaden his appeal and will be in court March 25th. So, Tricia, reliving these memories, how hard is this to hear?
It's always emotional when you hear him come up. I mean, I feel for the families first and foremost. I remember my friends who were found on his property, and there's just this real feeling of wanting it to be done. Like, can't you just go to jail and do your time and we never have to talk about you again? But our justice system is set up in such a way so that everyone can access an appeal, and I guess he's just pursuing what is his legal rights. There's so much harm done to the families, so many old wounds ripped right open. Every time you hear his name again on the news, that it seems wrong somehow that he should be allowed to do it for so long.
Well, I saw last week in a Vancouver Sun article, they're saying not enough attention is being paid on the families. Who are these people? And these poor families of the six victims that Picton was charged for have to relive all this again in March. How are they feeling, right?
Well, the few people that I have talked to are angry. Angry, angry, angry on just so many levels. And I think part of that anger comes from just emotional exhaustion. It's hard. I mean, some families have been at this for 10 years. It's too long, and some families aren't getting closure. I mean, as long as you don't have a death certificate, as long as your daughter is just, or mother is just one of the counts he's been charged with, but has yet to stand account for, you don't get a death certificate. You don't get to access certain benefits. You don't get closure. I couldn't imagine what it's like having a murdered daughter and not being able to have something as basic as a death certificate.
We have just a few minutes left here. I think it's important at the end of the day, in order for us to understand prostitution, we need to break down the stereotypes and reveal the truth. And on your website, you mentioned 19 things you can do to help. And I found it interesting. Number one says, look the men in your life in the eye and ask them if they buy sex.
Yeah. I think we need to understand it'll be closer to home than we expect. And I don't want to demonize men. I don't think men are wrong. I love men, and I want to see the best for them. So I look at men in my life and say, do you buy sex? And if they do, get them help. Like, help them walk out of this, right? Because it's a process for them as well. And I think once we start looking at men in our life and saying, as a woman, as a man, as another man, asking people in our lives if they do, makes them realize they can't hide it anymore. It's got to stop being so hidden, because it's the hiddenness that gives it the power it has. And I think if we just look at everyone and say, do you buy sex, it causes them to really reevaluate their actions as well.
All right, well, thanks, Trish. You've given us many things to think about today and hopefully changed many people's perceptions of the sex trade.
That's my goal.
Well, it was great talking with you today, Trisha. That's all the time we have, but I'd like to thank you for joining me today. If you'd like to learn more about how you can get involved abolishing prostitution, visit the website honorconsulting.com. This is For the Record, and I'm Vanessa Ibarra.